This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Hello. I hope you're doing well. I really do. I feel so fantastically good. It takes a little effort to remember how hard life can be. And how these sessions can oscillate between like, it's so amazing, and like, oh, it's so hard, it feels constricted. So, however you are, pretty sure it'll change. And I have a lot of trust in the value of doing it. And just getting close to how we are in the moment is very beautiful and free. Wonderful. Get close to that. Practice not trying to hold on to it. Plant seeds of just letting things flow instead of grasping. And if things seem difficult and difficult feelings are coming up, we can just see them without trying to force them to be something else. Just planting seeds of compassion, awareness, and care. I was lying here in this room with like 15 people in this deep stillness a few minutes ago, and someone went like hammering by at like 70 miles an hour on Skyline Drive on a motorcycle with super loud pipes. I was like, wow, I was kind of hearing that sound, but I'm like, that person has really got a whole different deal going on. And I mean, that's very noticeable to me, you know, but it's like, what's up with those dogs? What's their life right now? Ruff, ruff, ruff. Wow. There's these little insects around here. What's their life? This is a subject of great interest in the text that I pray no one will ask me to translate and comment on, Vasubandhu's 20 verses. The main subject is how different people's experiences are. As it says in the treatise on three natures, minds cause contrary views. Minds cause contrary views. Just like different views. The way we view the world give us a whole variety of perspectives. And that's vividly apparent moment to moment to me just from my own life during Sesshin. But then if you open up to other people and other beings, it becomes more and more wondrous and alive. I've been traveling for about a month teaching at different practice places. And I was at San Francisco Zen Center a week or two ago. And I gave a talk and did a workshop. And then it was like all that was over. And it was like the evening was done. And I was like, oh, I'm just here. What am I going to do? I'll go for a walk. So I went for a walk, and I've walked around that area a few times when I've been there, but I thought, oh, I'll walk over to the Castro. That's a well-known place. And it may be somehow salient to know that I am bisexual, but because of the manifestation of my sexuality and the fact that I've been partnered with a woman for like 15 years, I have as much straight privilege as any straight person. So I'm queer, but super straight. What is identity anyway? Anyway, I walked over to the Castro, and it was just beautiful. What a wonderful neighborhood. And there were lots of people in the street. It was a nice day. I know the weather has been rough around here for a long time. People were out celebrating. And I was just struck by how much I don't notice when I walk down most streets, the fact that queer people don't feel safe and comfortable just being who they are in public. So to go at a place where it's just like same-sex couples are holding hands and just being normally affectionate couples in the street, and transgender people are just out being whoever they are, and super fabulous crazy people are just being super fabulous. And it's like, oh, this is what the world can look like. Just people having room to be wholly who they are and be safe and be comfortable. How beautiful is that? People imagined a different kind of world in San Francisco 40, 50 years ago. They began to imagine a different kind of world where you didn't have to pretend and hide. And that imagination has created some beautiful creative experience. How cool is that? The fact that things are imaginary in the Buddhist tradition is about possibility. Also, the fact that they're empty. That gets very complicated, but anyway, because things are empty, things are possible. If they weren't empty, they'd be fixed. If they were solid, and it's all the same. No, they're only flux. This makes for possibility. So sometimes it's a little painful. You know, there's like a combination of a sorrow for me and a joyfulness in being in the Castro, because I saw both what wasn't true in many places and what is true there, and the beauty of what had been created there in juxtaposition to having grown up like in a small town in the Midwest was nowhere near imaginable. I don't think we ever thought that was possible. People just tried something different. You can try different things. It's cool. It seems like, oh, everything has to go this way. It's never true. Just for fun, I'm going to recite the whole section of the Treatise on Three Natures about the elephant. And then I'm going to talk about a very specific part, which focuses on why we always have power, why the teachings on the three natures are fundamentally about empowerment, and why every being, without exception, always has the capacity to do something beneficial in any moment. Also, by the way, something harmful, but let's not emphasize the negative. Okay, let's see if this all comes to mind. So, just as an illusion produced by an incantation may appear to be an elephant, a mere form is there, but the elephant is truly no elephant. The imaginary nature is like the elephant, its appearance is like the dependent. And the complete realized nature is the non-existence of the elephant there, it is said. The false imagination arises on the root mind as dual. The duality is utterly non-existent, but a mere appearance is there. The root consciousness is like the mantra, thusness is like the wood. Conceptualization is like the appearance of the elephant, and duality is like the elephant. I know that's just kind of out there. But you know, sometimes it's fun to go right to the text. You may have heard the word duality repeatedly in there. So the idea of non-duality is one of the central themes of the material I'm teaching from, the fact that any dualistic idea isn't an ultimate truth, the dualism between the self and others, between tomorrow and today, today and tomorrow, today and yesterday, all of them. They're not ultimate truths. They're ways we have interpreted what's going on. But it may be of interest to some of you that the idea of non-duality or Advaita, which is a central teaching of this text, is not a commonly explicitly stated theme in Buddhism prior to Yogacara. It may be occasionally implied or somewhere in there, but a lot of people think, like, you know, the idea that seeing through the division between subject and object is like the basic goal of Buddhism or something is very much a Yogacara idea. It's not very apparent in previous strains. And also had an enormous influence on the movement that some of you may have heard of called Advaita Vedanta. In fact, some people claim that Advaita Vedantists, they were calling them crypto Buddhists. They're like, you're pretending. Though that's all debates in ancient history, but pretending not to be Buddhist. I've done that before. Anyway, as I went through all that, there's a moment where it says the root consciousness is like the mantra. So the root consciousness or Mula Vijnana refers to the storehouse consciousness or the Alaya Vijnana, which is one of the main teachings in all of Yogacara Buddhism and by far the most widely known one. It's the idea that there's some aspect of what's happening right now that you can't see, which is the process of conditioning moving forward. So the basic idea is that any action that is done with a body or an action of thought or an emotion or any kind of mental action plants a seed that will produce a similar fruit at a later time. For those of you who like thought systems, this is generally called karma. So body, speech, and mind, when things happen with body, speech, and mind, it plants seeds that will produce similar results. So this is really, you know, in some ways, like kind of dead obvious. It's like the first time you ever did Oyoki, it's like, what am I doing here? You have no idea. You do it 10 times and it's like, oh, your body just does it. Or like tying a shoe. It's like if you ever tried to teach someone to tie a shoe, it's hard because your body just does it. There's embodied conditioning. Seeds were planted whereby the body, or in this stream of consciousness, gets used to moving in this way, interpreting what the body is, what the material is, and then it just happens. So the idea of a root consciousness or the Alaya Vijnana storehouse consciousness are all to explain why we can actually have habits, but more importantly, why what we do matters. So there's a lot of different ways to think about why what we do matters, but Buddhism is very focused on our capacity for liberation and our actions. So it makes a whole worldview based on the fact that we create our experience through the way we act, think, and believe. So for example, in many, many cultures for a long time, if you liked same-sex partners, it was not allowed. You had to hide or pretend. And that was just planted through seeds of people affirming that situation. And then some other people said, well, let's plant some different seeds. Let's try something different. Let's begin to create the belief that this is okay. And transformation occurred. That's just the example I happen to be using, but culture works this way. People embody the culture, they think in the cultural way, and it reproduces. But the idea of Buddhism is like, we can actually choose. That's what's cool. We can choose. So, like, the way we see the moment is constructed by all this previous conditioning, but right now we're planting seeds. And it's important, it's also handy to note that one of the basic ideas of this theory is that when a seed is planted, you have no idea when it will bear fruit. So it could be right away, could be later in life, could be in 1,000 years or maybe 100,000 years. And this is important because you may have been like, geez, I've been practicing meditation for 10 years and I'm still bonkers. Maybe not, but it happens. Some people, I often meet people who are very committed to their recovery groups, their meditation, their therapy, They're taking their psychiatric medications. They're doing all the actions that will promote their well-being, and they still suffer profoundly. It happens. This theory of mind says that makes sense that that's happening when it happens, but you still have power. And this is why it's important, because it's not going to help that person to give up. This is why, when I was talking about the pipeline work, I do it in the way that I do it, because it's not going to help me to give up. So it's very easy. Like, the whole Bodhisattva path is about seeing that the time scale of human suffering is insanely vast. It's like there are realms we can't even imagine. There's millions of kalpas. It's like, wow. So that then we can be like, okay, I'm going to keep going no matter what. I'm vowing to stay here. And if we're just thinking like, well, if I just get the problem resolved next week or next year, sometimes the problems aren't. This just takes away the whole thing of like waiting for that outcome, because there aren't outcomes. Outcomes are just dualistic ideas. There's process. Process. It's also nice because no one's left out. Do you ever have some people in your life or that you see in the world that you think really can't do anything beneficial? They're just horrible people. That is not a Buddhist idea. All those people at any moment can do something beneficial, and probably sometimes they do when you don't see it. The fabric of trust that makes human culture is unbelievable. Unbelievable. Every day that you like have something and no one steals it, that was a huge number of people agreeing not to take your stuff. Seriously, why did they do that? Because seeds of concern for each other and respect for each other's stuff have been planted. It's very easy to not see all the enormous mutual support that is constantly happening. Constantly. Every time you eat something, that's people caring for a process that makes it possible for us to survive. So anyone can plant some good seeds. Pretty cool. Every moment of your life matters. A lot of times it's not really clear how it's all going to work, and this is where I think Zen culture is very friendly, because I don't have to understand why washing my face for all beings is beneficial. I just do it. And it changes how I am. It changes how I respond to the world, because I just think even the smallest action is something that can be an opening to everyone and an offering. So take these vows home. Beings are numberless. Vow of freedom. It's cool. Speaking of vows to free all beings, how about them turkeys? Come on. They're funny looking. I mean, maybe you haven't seen the turkeys that are wandering around. They're an odd duck, sort of prehistoric, and they make funny noises, especially in the morning. I don't know. I've seen so many wild turkeys. You know, these turkeys here are cool. I've traveled a lot in last year. I've seen turkeys in New England. I've seen turkeys in the last year in turkeys in New England, Minnesota, Georgia, Montana, California, and maybe some other places I don't remember. Wild, huh? Did you know that turkey range is much larger than it ever was before? They have the largest range. Well, I don't know. They have a larger range than they did in the 1800s. Why is that? Because people tried to support turkeys, or at least that's what the Audubon Society says, and everyone I've talked to about it says. Basically, people said there are not very many turkeys, but we kind of like these. Let's get together with people and create the conditions whereby turkeys can thrive. And it was partnerships with many organizations. Interestingly, a lot of hunters' organizations who like to shoot turkeys, sorry, turkeys, and conservation organizations, which are often, you may not know this, not in alignment with hunting organizations. deep partnerships across apparent dualities, whereby people work together and created the conditions for some folks to thrive. Some folks that say weird things like, wow. This may seem kind of small, but it probably doesn't seem small to those turkeys, especially when a turkey has like a bunch of chicks. It probably thinks, this is a big deal to me. It's cool. Y'all remember the ozone layer crisis? Remember in the 80s? I remember we had an exchange student from Argentina at my high school in Iowa. And she came and she had very dark complexion. And you know, just having these conversations to get to know each other. And she said, yeah, it's really weird. Something started, you know, it's very popular to just lie on the beach where I come from. And something weird started happening. No one knew what it was. We go outside and lie in the sun and we get like our skin would get all red and painful. They were not used to getting sunburns. And it was because, and she was like, and then we learned it's because the ozone layer is being depleted. And we're way near the south. That was like terrible. I remember being all freaked out. What's going to happen? That we're going to be incinerated? Did you know the ozone layer is almost completely repaired to its pre-1980 levels? Did you know that? They're saying probably 10 years on the given going rate that's been going for about 30 or 40 years. Why did that happen? People said, you know, we don't want to incinerate the whole southern hemisphere. We are going to ban these chemicals that cause it. They made those choices and the change has happened. You know, people can do things because they care. And good things can happen. Good things can happen. I just thought I'd tell that story because yesterday I'm like, yeah, stop the pipeline. Well, there's the pipeline. Yeah, I'm not in control. I'm not saying I have any idea what will happen. I'm just saying there's possibility that what people do matters and has impact on the whole dependent system. Okay, I think I'm going to tell one more little story. And then I'll make a little room for other voices here. This story is just about possibility. So I think at some point, I think I was here and I was talking about how awful it was in Minneapolis in the immediate aftermath of the murder of George Floyd and how it was really chaotic and people were unbelievably upset. I personally found it hard and, you know, it was terrible. And, you know, I'm part of like this multi-faith group called the Multi-Faith Anti-Racist Change and Healing Group. And we get together every month and meet and support each other and make plans for doing stuff that hopefully reduces racism. It's mostly queer clergy, so it's pretty fabulous. But anyway, these are a lot of the focus of the work for years had been on trying to stop police from killing unarmed Black people because they killed Jamar Clark, Thurman Blevins, Orlando Castile, all in our area. It was tough. So then, you know, the George Floyd murder was just such an awful thing. It was like overwhelming. So we get to our meeting and it's just a couple days after. And I think I said, when I was talking about this before, it's like, I don't know what to do. Everyone was completely baffled. And some of the people were super overwhelmed with emotions. And it was like, oh, this is so hard. But, we are coming together to try and take care of each other. Because that's the root of our practice, to build a community that's about love and care. But anyway, there we are, and people are just really kind of downtrodden. And, you know, we're supposed to have some leadership. So we're like, what? No one knows what to do. And then my friend Dana says, I know what to do. We're going to put on a video of Prince singing with the Muppets. Of course, that's what you do. So she Googled Prince singing with the Muppets because we're meeting on Zoom at this point because, you know, that was where we were. And Prince sang Starfish and Coffee, Maple Syrup and Jam, Butterscotch Clouds, Tangerine, Side Order a Ham. If you set your mind free, baby, maybe you'll understand. Starfish and Coffee, Maple Syrup and Jam. You could see in the little boxes, everybody, Starfish and Coffee. If you set your mind free, baby, yeah, feeling it. Immediate. Not waiting for something else. It was complete. It was very real. What seemed like a complex, distant mass of things suddenly came down to just being together, feeling the joy of being alive, and our commitment to the possibility that we could all be more free. The invitation of these teachings I'm given is to be spontaneous. Instead of being like, well, it's like this, you realize I'm actively involved in bringing the what world do I want to make? Let's try something. And by the way, after the song played, then we were like, okay, we need to make a spreadsheet with a mutual aid assignments. And you know, we did our work. We did our work, but we did it with some lightness and with some heart. So, I hope we can do what we're doing here with some lightness and some heart, some commitment, some letting go, some dogs. Thank you. So, on the schedule, it says something like Dharma talk and conversation. I don't know. So, I just want to frame. There's so many ways to talk to one another and communicate with one another. So, I want to frame this in a way that I think is good for session. So, I'm just going to invite anyone who wants to say something. You can ask a question. That's cool. Or you can share a reflection. And just inviting you to talk about what's kind of alive for you. So, but we don't need to do a thing where we're kind of talking across each other's comments. So, like if someone says something, you can just listen to them and that's their thing and just let it be. And then if you have something that is living in your heart now, you can speak that. So that's probably enough. Does anyone want to? It's always nice to hear those people who are like, I don't think I ever want to talk in a group. But you don't have to hear those people, but it's welcome. True.
I just want to go to what feels sort of fundamental clarification. Using the term something is unreal. So that sounds like it's same as imagine or imagining. And is there anything more to it than that it doesn't, that it's impermanent or that it changes?
You mean, is the evidence of its not realness something beyond impermanence? Or do you mean, like, does it have any other characteristics?
Yeah, does it have, is there anything to its meaning beyond that it is impermanent?
Well, I think I'm getting you. So this may, I've always maybe zigging when you're trying to get me to zag, but the basic idea is this teaching claims to tell you what is real. So it says there's a complete realized nature and we're giving some kind of description of it. And there's also an imaginary nature and we're giving a description of that. And the imaginary nature is not the complete realized nature. Also, by the way, they're non-dual, so they're identical. Sorry, it's not my fault, but let's focus on their distinction. So it's very useful. The long answer is yes, there's more to it than just impermanence, or the short, super short answer. But what's important here is to see that from a Buddhist perspective, what is real is what is not suffering and not conducive to suffering. So Buddhist philosophy is not concerned with the kind of ideas of metaphysics generally that are of great interest in the West. And even if you don't even know anything about Western philosophy, they tend to permeate how we think about the world. So the basic idea is what makes a Buddha is that they see what is real, they don't suffer and they don't cause suffering. And all those things are like super close together. So by seeing reality, that's how they do the non-suffering and are liberative. So the basic claim here is they just see that all the things that bind makes appear to us as being distinct objects aren't really distinct objects. So the fact that they're impermanent is actually secondary here to the fact that they're made by the tendencies of mind. So for example, the tendency of mind for me to see you as distinct from me, which is just a mental tendency. It's not an absolute true thing. That's just an example I'll use. So yes, but the really important point is then we're saying because we believe and we are affected by all these mental constructions, they really matter and we should engage with them in a way that's liberative. Do you have any further? This is an interesting line of inquiry. So do you want to follow up at all or not?
No, take another life minute.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Thank you.
So what's fun about this practice is how we can change how our mind is pretty quickly. And once recently up in Big Sky country, looking at the Pitner Range, and the skies are vast up there, right? As you know. And the weather comes through and then it changes to open sunshine and just glorious green. I went to a gas stop place and it's like, wow, the weather really changes here. It's miraculous. Wouldn't it be cool if our minds could change like that? And it's like,
everybody's in their cowboy hat.
Things are kind of fixed in how view is, but it's just so liberating that see how easy it is to give it up, you know, and that's just all reflection.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, you may all be people who have attained the excellent realization that trees are really good teachers. And that maybe if we just go out and just let this environment be what it is, that actually invites us into what all these teachings I'm giving are pointing to us. deep sense of interrelationship, awareness that each thing we do matters. Don't give up on the possibility that you might drop away all the distinctions. I'm a Soto Zen guy, so I'm not trying to get you to attain some realization, but you're already not separate from the universe, and it's really fine to just notice it. That would be fine. So yeah, let's just take a little break. I think that's nice to do. And Zazen resumes, I think, in 40 minutes. So I have a little time to just let it in. Thank you all.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jikoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jikoji, please visit us on the web at jikoji.org.